Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If there's an influx of followers, I'm going to have to delete that now, unlist everything.
You're welcome. Now arriving on Cultaholic Island. Actually, we should waste no more time before finding out what the three favourite matches of my special guest are. We'll get to it. But first of all, Debbie Keitel. First of all, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Second of all, how do you take your coffee?
Black. Jet black. Like my soul.
Like my soul. Anybody that has seen you wrestle recently has seen you with the coffee cup. So I think I was too frightened to ask when we were stood in the ring together. I'll ask now that we're at a distance. Has it always been black coffee?
Yes, because, I used to be partial to a flat white. But then one time I went to Paris and I ordered a flat white and the waiter was like, I was like, oh, and he was like, black. And I was like, okay, thank you. And then I just drank it and I was like, actually, that is quite nice. And then I just drank it black ever since.
Pushy waiter. Got you off the flat white onto the black coffee.
Yeah.
Is there a particular roast you go for with a black coffee?
I love Tim Horton's coffee. It's my favorite. Because it has like the vanilla infusion in it as well, so it's really, really nice. Or I love Dunkin' Donuts, so anytime I'm back in America, I always get Dunkin' Donuts as well.
Nice. The vanilla, yes, there is a vanilla-y essence to the Tim Hortons ones, and there's hardly any in the UK in terms of Tim Hortons. What's it like in Ireland?
We don't have them in the Republic, only up north. So anytime I wrestle up north, it's the first thing I do. Go to Tim Hortons.
Do you have one particular one that you go to the moment that you're in the north?
There is one, and it's beside the Titanic Wrestling promotion in Conswater Shopping Centre. And it's 10 minutes from the venue to the shopping centre. And I'll probably get like two or three just to make up for the fact that we don't have them.
Is that a main reason why you like to get booked there, or true or false?
I mean, it's a perk.
Don't want to dunk on Titanic. I'm sure they're lovely.
Oh, they're very good. They're very good.
They're wonderful people. But we aren't here so much to talk about coffee, but we are stranding you on a desert island, Debbie Keitel.
Okay.
And we are doing so with three wrestling matches that you can watch whilst you are there. We're going to go through them one by one by one as we chat today. But what would you like your first one to be, Debbie?
I would go with Booker T and Goldust versus the Un-Americans from No Mercy 2002.
I can say, hand on heart, without even checking the official spreadsheet, this is the first time this match has ever been chosen.
No way.
In the near 200 episodes that we've done Desert Island Graps, for whatever reason, people have overlooked Buck Dust versus the Un-Americans from 02.
It's so good. So good.
Now, I know Gold Dust was one of your faves as you were growing up. Does that play into why you chose this match?
Yes, it does. But I also love, like, Christian, Booker T, Chris Jericho and Gold Dust are my four all-time favorite wrestlers. And when I watched this as a kid, I didn't care who won, because I was just obsessed with both sides. So like I was just so happy and excited. But yeah, Goldust is definitely a huge influence character wise on Debbie Keitel for sure as well.
How so?
I think it's the being able to push the button a little bit, push the boundaries, and to really go all in and really commit to, I suppose, a persona.
Because this makes it a wonderful combo, because I've heard in other interviews you say how Debbie Keitel is somewhat inspired by Patsy from Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, now picturing Goldust and Patsy, they're not a million miles away, to be fair, if you really break it down. Don't tell Joanna Lumley I said that.
Yeah, I think there's something like it's almost like Cruella de Vil as well, how something can look so picturesque and like alien-like and stunning, and then the minute they open their mouth, they're just vile. And it just completely changes the image of them. And I just saw that and I was like, oh, I think I'll have a bit of that. Yeah.
When was the last time you watched Un Americans versus Book Dust?
Oh, I'd say a year ago when I was doing tape study with some of my students. And it was actually with Anita Vaughn, my tag partner. And a couple of people were asking me about like my favorite tag matches. And I brought that one up. So I made everyone watch it.
So what is it in that you were pinpointing to your students during the tape watching session?
That sometimes stuff can go wrong, but it can make the match so much better because it's real. Like for instance, in that match, the rope breaks when Chris Jericho is going for the lion salt, and it's like, oh, was that meant to happen, or was that an accident? Or you're like, oh, like, you know, but mistakes happen, and it's about like picking yourself back up and not, you know, going deer in headlights, oh my god, what do I do? You know, it's about like continuing the story and finishing off what you set out to do. And I just think that is such a good example of, first of all, extremely good character work, incredible tag wrestling, and like that, telling a story and not dwelling on, you know, mistakes that might happen, you know.
That's, and for that reason, more people should probably be watching matches like that.
Yes.
Where something does go wrong, because you see the true metal of people. I remember a Will Ospreay Ricochet match, and it was at the height of their first burst of stardom after they had that incredible one-on-one match. And then they got booked for WCPW, and within about 30 seconds, the ropes all broke.
Oh.
So they had this phenomenal match without the ropes, and everyone went, actually, they're very good. And similar to this one, just something like that going wrong and having four guys in there that have the ability to improvise and work around it.
Yes.
What did your students think of it when they walked away from that session? Were they buzzing about the match more than you thought?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they had a new perspective on, you know, because I do think that with the newer people coming through, they get so bogged down if something doesn't go to, you know, perfectly correct as they planned or as they set out to do. And I always say to them, though, that these little mistakes or errors that happen make it real, you know, because it's a natural reaction that's happening as these things happen. And like sometimes it can make the match more realistic and better in some ways. So I think they were just feeling a little bit better about, you know, going into matches and not getting so fixated on how something should go, you know.
Your first bit of tape observation, your first tape watching session was with your dad, wasn't it?
Yes, it was indeed. See, we didn't have anywhere to watch wrestling. So my dad would go to England for work and he would bring back tapes. So he would just put on a tape and I'd be like, oh, what's this on the telly? And then we'd watch it. And then he'd just put in another tape. And I would just assume that this was going in order. But like one tape could have been from like 89, the other tape could have been from like 94, you know. So I was just like, oh, wow, this doesn't make sense, but we'll keep watching. But yeah, it was my father that got me into it. My father was a huge Roddy Piper fan and a Hulk Hogan fan. So
did you think he had any inkling at that early stage that you would have ended up doing what you're doing?
No. Now, I grew up as an athlete and an actress. So I started very young from both aspects, I suppose, of professional wrestling. So he always knew I was going to do something mad, but I don't think he knew it was going to be this mad. I remember he took me to a tribute show in Galway, and I actually thought, like, X-Pac, that was X-Pac in the ring. I was like, oh my God, X-Pac in Galway, who would have thought? And my father is 6 foot tall, so he stood out. And after the show, we did the meet and greet, and one of the wrestlers asked my dad, did he ever think about, you know, training or getting into the sport, because my father would have played rugby and Gaelic football for years. And my father was like, oh no. But to this day, anytime he comes to a wrestling show, he's always like, and did you know now that they wanted me to be a wrestler as well?
That could have been me up there. Yeah. But I'd yeah. Oh, too much going on.
Yeah.
You mentioned you were an actress, you were also an athlete. What was the sport of choice?
So I started off as a very promising Gaelic football player.
Prodigy, if anything.
Yes. And unfortunately, I grew up in a time where there was actually no women's teams or girls' teams. So I had to train with the guys and play with the guys. But unfortunately, when it came to actual leagues, I wasn't allowed to play. Even though I trained as much as them, never missed a session, was always there to tug out. But I was never allowed to actually participate because it was an all-male sport at the time. So my father basically was like, all right, well, I'm not having this. So my father went down and formed a female league. And so that's how I started being able to play the sport and compete. And as I got older, then I kind of moved into secondary school and they didn't have a Gaelic football team. So I was like, right, what am I going to do? So I became a hockey player, another very promising athlete as a hockey player. And then I discovered music and all of that went out the window. And I got into music, I got into acting, and I got into film. And then, yeah.
So what became of the Gaelic football league that your dad set up?
So it's still going to this day. He's not involved in it anymore. He passed it on. But that was set up in, I want to say, 2001, 2002. And it's still going now to this day. So I covered all roles in the league, but I was a fantastic midfielder. I don't know if you know much about Gaelic football, but that's the most sought after position.
Because is it a bit of everything and you're right in the center of the action?
Yes. Yeah. So you're the two midfielders start off, the ball goes up in the air and then it's like the opposite side and you both go for the ball at the same time.
Do you miss it?
I do. And sometimes when I go home, like we'll go for a kickabout and we'll bring out the ball out to the pitch and stuff like that. It's just a really good, well, first of all, it's fantastic for fitness, but I love competitive sports. So yeah, I love it. I still do. I still watch it.
but obviously music drew you away from that.
Yes.
Were you in a band? I seem to recall you were in a band.
Yeah, I swear I have lived like 9 lives. My friends always make fun of me.
I've got like 4 of the lives here, so there's another 5 to go.
So, I got into music, and then there was auditions for a band that a lot of people want to start a band and they needed a bass player. So I begged my dad. I was like, oh, please, you know, buy me a bass, please. I will commit to it. I promise. Even though my track record at that point, you know, not great for the
No, because you've started Gaelic football and you've gone, nah, and then you've moved into hockey and you've gone, no.
Yeah. So he was like, fine, I'll buy you the bass. So the auditions were coming up. I had no clue how to play the bass. Got the bass, went on to tabs.com. I had to go with one song. And I picked I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness. And I practiced and practiced and practiced for a week solid, 24/7. And I managed to be able to pull it off. So I was like, right, walked into the audition. And they were like, okay, off you go. And I played it, sweating the whole way through. And they were like, okay, great. And they were like, have you got something else? And I was like, just started playing the same song over again. And they were just like, wow, okay. So they ended up using me in the end, and like they they basically called my bluff straight away. They were like, when did you learn that? And I was like, a week ago. And they were like, okay, well, if you can learn that in a week and you've never touched a bass before, I'm sure we can work with that. But then the lead singer dropped out just before Battle of the Bands. And I was like, well, hey, look, I actually can sing, not so much play the bass. So I just stepped into that role then, and I started performing, and I did that for years, and went through a couple of different bands, did some solo stuff, did some studio stuff, and yeah.
What was your favorite aspect of that? Was it the solo stuff, or was it being in a band?
Definitely being fronting a band, because it was the performance aspect of it, you know, the getting to work with the crowd and get them into it and just feeding off them and being able to perform. Very exciting.
You've done so much. You've lived 9 lives.
Yeah.
Now, there isn't much of the lives of Debbie Keitel on YouTube, but there is a YouTube channel for the name Kedar McKeown Joyce.
No!
That has 14 subscribers and has posted 7 videos.
This, no.
What? I'm sorry you've done interviews where no one does any bloody research outside of what match did you have last Tuesday.
Oh my God.
It's good. It's good. Because you lived in New York for a bit, and this is obviously like this is you finding your New York moment, like finding your New York feet.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. It's great. You went to Fashion Week. You got to hang out loads of the glitterati in New York. And
I did again another life. I got my master's in production and direction. I moved to New York, didn't have a job, didn't have anywhere to live. I applied for a job on Craigslist, went for an interview. Turns out this woman ran a marketing firm and she specialized in video segments and gossip columns for fashion and gossip and celebrities and all that kind of stuff. And she hired me as a production assistant. Went from a production assistant to an editor, and then New York Fashion Week, I'm on the runway with the camera and I'm pointing it at Pete Wentz. We have an interview scheduled in 5 minutes, and our broadcast journalist is nowhere to be found. So my boss grabs the camera off me, shoves me onto the runway, puts a microphone in my hand and says, go. And I'm like, so do you like clothes?
Do you like clothes?
But I think
shoes, eh?
Yeah, but I think he found it very endearing, and I think he understood what was going on. And afterwards, my boss was just like, "Okay, so we're putting you on camera from now on." So I got to interview some incredible people, some amazing people.
How did that broadcast journalist take it?
I mean,
didn't show up.
I'm sure she's doing quite well.
No.
I don't know.
Because that's the incredible cutthroat nature of being in that industry.
Yes.
Is it just takes one person's off day for it to be the beginning of your journey.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Right place, right time, and off you went.
Yeah.
Were there plans to, so obviously you got the ball rolling with that. Was that looking like your future then? Was it a case of, I'm going to interview?
Yeah, it really was. It was something like when I was a kid, you know, we'd play games and stuff like that. We'd have our own talk shows and all that kind of stuff. But I never thought that anything would come of it. But when I moved to New York, I just thought like, okay, well, if I could do this, anything's really possible. So that was pretty much what I kind of sought out to do. And then when I moved back to Ireland, I kind of realized that wanting to do that there is probably like wanting to be a princess. It's just not possible. I mean, in Ireland, I don't know what it is like for you over there, but there's lots of gatekeepers in TV here, and it's kind of very hard to get in unless someone's going to bring you in, if that makes sense. So it is all about who you know. So I just kind of thought that maybe that wasn't going to happen for me here. And while I was waiting to go back to America, I just decided, you know, what the hell? I'll just start training to be a wrestler. Why not? I'm bored.
Did you? Because I hear what you said there in the sense of doing that is like wanting to be a princess, but you lived it for a bit. So you were proof positive that it was possible. Was it? I don't want to speak outside of the people who, when you came back, you saw. Was that kind of that spirit sort of drilled out of you, or pushed down a bit because of the nature of the media where you are?
Well, I'll tell you, nobody would humble you more than an Irish person. Okay. So you coming back from the big city with your notions isn't going to get you anywhere in Ireland, unfortunately. I think in Ireland, it's almost, you know, it's not that nobody likes to see you doing well or nobody wants to see you do well, but it's just, we're very like, keep it to yourself natured, if that makes sense. And when I came home, you know, it was very much like, it didn't feel realistic to be able to do that here, to be a performer, to be an entertainer. It just didn't feel like that could be an actual job here, you know? So I did think when I got home, it was kind of knocked out of me. And that, you know, that idea of, oh, well, you have to be realistic, you know, kind of set in. So it's like going from one high point in your life where you're like doing something you couldn't even dream of to coming home and being like, oh, well, I better get a big person's job, or I better, you know, work in a bank, or I better, you know, I think the idea of doing something like that just becomes unrealistic because of the environment, if that makes sense.
No, it does, because we laugh about it, but my dad's not even Irish, but he's probably the one that he always makes an effort to keep me grounded in all the stuff that I do. And I love my dad, and my mum and dad came to when I ring announced for Impact in the UK, and I was like, the biggest gig, but there's my dad in the crowd just going, boo, you're rubbish. Get off. Go get a proper job.
Yeah.
Cheers, dad. So I hear it, and it comes from how can I speak in my case? It tends to come from a place of love, because like, we don't want to see people get hurt, but it can be jaded. It can be tiring.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, stop thinking like that. Stop it.
Yeah, for sure. It's the same even with wrestling. Like sometimes I find myself, if I'm not in the wrestling bubble consistently, I start to feel like I'm being pulled out of it. And that it's not a feasible life choice, if that makes sense. So I have to surround myself with the right people. I have to surround myself with the industry constantly so that I don't feel myself being pulled out of it, if that makes sense. Because I think it's so easy to, you know, I don't know how to describe it, to get jaded or to feel like, oh, well, maybe this is just silly. You know, maybe I should, you know, focus on real life and, well, not real life, but like maybe I should focus on, you know, more grown up things.
Grown up. And there's the word again, isn't it? It's the more, you know, go get an adult job, do more grown up things.
Yeah.
But when you're in it, then the adrenaline's going and the endorphins are popping. So when you're out of it, you get less of that, that kick. Isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Let's do your second match. So we've had the Un-Americans versus Book Dust from No Mercy 2002. What would you like your second one to be?
I'm going to go with Trish Stratus versus Victoria at Survivor Series 2002, the hardcore match.
So why this one?
Because again, something went wrong. And yeah, it's just the perfect example of it just fit perfectly. Like at the end of the match, the finish was a snap suplex. And like, who would have thought that a match could finish with a snap suplex, you know? So obviously an audible was called, or, you know, something happened along the way. But it was just, for me as a kid watching that, I'd never seen anything like that before. So I just thought it was so incredible, especially because they didn't hold back. You know, they really, really went for it. And I just think, sorry, my cat is meowing.
No, that's okay.
He's at the door.
He can come in if he wants.
Oh, I don't know.
Will he stand on the laptop and break things or not?
Yeah, he likes to sit on the laptop. But if you can't hear it, he'll be fine.
Oh, that's... I heard him. No, it's nice. I like it. Go on. What's your cat's name?
George Michael.
Of course it's George Michael. Why is your cat called George Michael, Debbie?
Because, do you know what? I might actually see if he'll come in. One sec.
Let's bring George Michael in. So this is a treat because he's outside the door. We can honestly say and not lie that George Michael is about to join us on Desert Island Graps on the Cultaholic podcast feed. If you're a Patreon, this is why you need to pay for this episode. And there's George Michael. Hello, George Michael. Ladies and gentlemen, George Michael. Oh, George is a beaut.
Isn't he?
Yeah. How old is George? How old is he?
He is 4.
What's the story behind George Michael? We will get back to the rest of it, I promise. What's the story behind George Michael?
Well, I rescued George in 2020 during lockdown. I saw a post saying that this abandoned shed had a ton of cats in it and they needed to find homes. And I was looking at getting a pet. I've always been a dog person. I had cats when I was a kid, but I've always been a dog person. And I just thought, oh my God, I can't, like, I have to do something, you know? So I reached out to them and I contacted, because obviously at the time you weren't allowed to leave your house more than 5 kilometers. But George happened to be in Monaghan, which is probably from Dublin, a 3-hour drive. So I called my friend who is a policeman. I told him the situation. I was like, you can surely drive past this, you know, this limit. And he said, yeah. And I told him the story. And he was like, don't worry about it, I'll sort it. And within 24 hours, George Michael was at my doorstep.
Oh, how wonderful. I'm so, well, how lucky George Michael got you.
Found, I know.
And you know, now you live in George Michael's house. That's the rule.
Yes. Yes, rent free in George Michael's house.
That's I mean, I'm looking for a title for this podcast, and I think it might be Debbie Keitel Lives Rent Free in George Michael's House.
Love it. Love it.
And with the wrestling, sorry, it's a wrestling podcast. I apologize. yes, because the finish to that match did feel very sudden. And I don't know whether it was because Trish had got injured. I never quite knew the story, or that it was just a case of the refs were counting the three and the shoulders were just down for three and that was it.
Yeah.
But to that point, the idea of a hardcore match for the women's title, there'd maybe been three.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Was it important to you as a female wrestling fan to watch that match?
Absolutely. Definitely. Because at the time as well, you knew we were talking about probably 2 or 3 minutes they were getting anyway. And they were just going out there doing the bare bones of wrestling anyway. So the fact that they got more time, got to showcase a side of women's wrestling that hadn't really been shown before, especially, you know, at that height for the women's championship, I just thought that was huge.
It was a big deal. And it's one of those matches that would have led you to where we're at now. We've been to New York, we've come back, and you've gone, let's give wrestling training a try. Was it straight to Fight Factory you went, or was there somewhere before that?
No, it was straight to Fight Factory. And the reason I chose Fight Factory is when I was working in New York, I was at a Comic-Con event in Rockaway Park Casino in New York. And we were there to interview certain people, but we definitely weren't there to interview Mick Foley, who I decided to just go up and, you know, have a chat with. And when I started chatting to him, he asked me where I was from, and I said Galway, and he started singing Galway Girl, and he said, I just came from Galway, I did a open mic night there. And I said, oh my god, that's crazy. And we started chatting, and I told him that he was my favorite wrestler as a kid, one of my favorite wrestlers as a kid. And he said, asked me, would I ever think of doing it? And I was like, oh no, like I think I'd be too old to start something like that. At the time I was 25, 26. And he said, you're never too old. And he started telling me about Diamond Dallas Page. He was 36, 37. He was like, just do it. He was like, if you have any interest in it, just go to one class. He was like, one of the wrestlers I work with, Finn Balor, has a school there. I don't know who's running it now, but you should check it out next time you're home. He was like, maybe it's a one and done. Maybe it's something you'll like. And that kind of stuck with me. And then I'd say 6 months later, I moved back home. And then just as I was moving home, Trump was going in. And I was like, maybe I'll just sit tight here for a little time.
I don't think I want to go there for a while now.
Yeah. So I was home about 6 months and I was like, I cannot adapt to this. Like, it's such a culture shock coming back to it. I didn't think it would be as shocking going over as it was coming back, but it really was. So I was like, right, I need to do something to occupy my weekends or my time. So I was like, right, I'll contact that school. I'll give it a go. I'll go to one session and see, and instantly walk through the door. And I was hooked.
Was there anything when you started training, because obviously when you go into it, you've got an idea of what you think's going to happen.
Yeah.
How much of it varied based on what you thought wrestling would be like compared to what it was when you actually did it?
Well, when I pulled up outside, it was a shed. So I was like, oh, I did not expect this, because all you think about is this big giant ring, and you just assume that it's going to be exactly like that. And it never is. So I walked in, the shutters came up. I walked in, it was like a warehouse unit, and there was just all these old blue mats on the floor. There was no ring and there was a crash mat, and it was just not what I thought it was going to be at all. And there was no, there was no sit and watch or anything like that. It was like, if you're here, you're mucking in. So just jump straight in. Don't worry about it. If there's something you can't do, we'll break it down. But if you can do it, just go for it. So that's kind of been my attitude towards training, is just like, jump into it and give it a go.
So obviously you would have had a few trainers and guest trainers coming in your time. What's the piece of advice that you were given whilst in your early years at Fight Factory that has stayed with you?
I would say the best piece of advice I've been given is to train everywhere and to train with everyone. Because if you're just going to stick to the same old thing, then you're going to get the same old results, I guess.
And it's interesting because that's a great bit of advice that you were given. And we talked just a little while ago about the gatekeeping nature of wrestling. And there are some schools where if you start with them, they will do everything but give you that bit of advice.
Yep.
And it'll almost be, I know people who have been almost ostracized for the audacity of wanting to learn from somebody other than the guy they're learning from.
I know. I have this conversation with my students as well. And Fight Factory want everyone to be the best at what they can do. And you're not going to learn everything from the one space. So we encourage everyone to get out there and train with everyone. Go to Japan, go to Scotland, go to the UK, go to France, go to Spain, go wherever, and just learn and take in as much as information as possible. Just be a sponge. Because there's nothing worse than putting all this effort financially, emotionally, mentally into your journey, only for someone to turn around and say, you can't do that. Well, are you paying for this? Are you, you know, are you fronting the bill for this? Because I'm pretty sure that I'm the one investing in this, you know? So when I hear students still going through that kind of stuff, it really, really frustrates me, because at the end of the day, it's your journey, it's not theirs. And if they have an issue with you training somewhere else, then I would see that as a lucky escape, to be completely honest.
Yeah, it's such an old school way of thinking. Mm-hmm. That I'm glad there has been some changes. I imagine that, I mean, there's probably been a lot that has changed since you came into Fight Factory. Now you've gone from being a student to being one of the mentors there. You know, you're a major part of the new Debbie Keitel's coming through.
Yes.
What is something that you've noticed about the industry now compared to when you came into it? Like negative and positive changes that have happened during that time?
Well, there's definitely been more positive changes. In majority of the places I work, there's either a very strong women's division, or there's no division, women's division at all, because everyone just wrestles each other. And there's no, oh, well, we can only have one women's match, or we can, you know, there's no limits in the majority of places I work now. Whereas when I first started, you'd be lucky to get on a show. And if you were on a show, you'd be wrestling the same girl every month for the foreseeable, because they weren't going to bring in anyone else. You know, there was no variety. You'd be wrestling the same girl all over the country. Even when I was going to the UK, I was wrestling the same girl that I'd been wrestling at home. And it just, there was a lack of effort, there was a lack of input, and a lack of direction for most women in wrestling. Whereas now, you know, I'm having production meetings and, you know, proper setup and proper direction and all that kind of stuff now, whereas that probably wouldn't have been there before. I just think there's more investment in women's wrestling now. And if there isn't a women's division, it's because the women can wrestle the guys, and it's gender fluid, and there's, you can just wrestle and be whoever you want. And so it's, when I started, it wasn't necessarily like that. So there's definitely positives. It's still negatives, of course. There's negatives with everything. It's entertainment, you know. But yeah, there's definitely been some drastic changes between when I started and now, for sure.
It's been many years since it, but you were a very prominent voice during the speaking out movement, which when wrestling and everything stopped, it was absolutely the right time to start those conversations. Because there was a lot of fear that came from locker rooms that if you spoke up, then you'd have your bookings taken away. Well, no one's getting bookings now, so let's be honest about everything.
Yeah.
Since there's been a lot of people that didn't come back to the industry just because of how affected they were by things that came out about colleagues and about and about friends during that time. But it's been four years now, and we've been properly back for the last three or so. How do you feel is the, what's the temperature in the locker room these days compared to when things first started coming back post speaking out?
I think when we first came back, you know, people felt like they were kind of walking on eggshells. You know, people were afraid to say anything because you didn't know, you know, if you were going to offend someone or if you were going to say the wrong thing. And it was kind of like that for a while. But then eventually people just realized that, like, if you're a good person, you shouldn't have to change who you are or anything like that, or walk on eggshells, you know. So I only work in spaces now that I wouldn't feel uncomfortable in, if that makes sense. And when I wasn't sure if I was going to come back, and then in 2021 I was like, well, look, if I'm going to be in the locker room, I'm going to make sure that the locker room I'm in is clean as a whistle, and that everyone is looked after, like whoever it is, that everyone involved in that locker room is looked after. And if they need someone to you know, call someone out, or if they need someone to raise something, I'll be that person. So that was kind of my driving force to come back, was that, you know, I'm going to be that guy that people contact or people call or people pull aside to say, look, this happened, you know, what do you think I should do? And that's kind of who I became there for a while. And I think that's why I wanted to get involved in coaching. And that's actually why I started our squad training sessions, which are for LGBTQ plus, basically anyone that wouldn't feel comfortable in a, I suppose, male dominated space, they would come to my class and we would ease them in. And, you know, those classes became so popular that everybody integrated into the normal classes. So they don't even, we don't even need that anymore, which is incredible. But yeah, that was my driving force behind becoming a coach, is just to make sure that what happened to me never happened to anyone else.
Do you see your future in wrestling being more in the coaching side of it, or is there, you must still have more boxes you want to tick in the wrestling world?
I definitely have more boxes I want to tick, but I think I'll always be involved in some aspect, whether it be behind the scenes in coaching, behind the scenes in production. Maybe I might go back into broadcast journalism. But for now, there's some boxes I want to tick off before I start looking at anything else.
Let's manifest that destiny.
Yes, let's manifest.
Let's manifest it. What boxes are we ticking, Debbie?
I'm just at this point, I don't want to. I'm putting it out into the universe, but I'm just being open. I'm just being open to everything that comes my way, because I think for a long time there, I put my eggs into the one basket. And unfortunately, you get to a point where you can't change your body type. You can't change your age. So, you know, if you're just going to put all your eggs into this one basket, you're kind of missing out on all this other stuff that could be available to you. So right now, I'm just open to everything. I'd absolutely love to work for TNA. I'd absolutely love to work for NXT again. I'd love to work for the NWA. I'd love to finally debut in America. I'd love to wrestle in Canada. You know, I've never wrestled in Germany. So I have my own personal goals, and, you know, and then I have the things that, you know, are like, oh, I would absolutely love to do that. But again, this time around, I'm not putting that much pressure on one thing, if that makes sense. I'm just open.
I get it. And you open to new experiences. All experiences, come one, come all.
Yes.
But if I was to press you, Debbie Keitel, because you mentioned that one thing there, and I could tell as you said it by your body language, there was something you were picturing in the front of your mind palace. Would you dare to share with me what that was?
What do you mean?
I felt like there was a particular thing that you wanted to manifest, and I want to know whether you would share exactly what that was with us. You don't have to, but okay. It's my job as a in speech marks journalist to push you on it.
I genuinely would love to work for TNA.
Nice.
For years, I've watched the product. I think TNA have the best characters in the industry. I think they have the best wrestlers in the industry. Their women's division is the strongest it's ever been. I can see how the characters are nurtured there and encouraged to really, you know, go all in on who they are. And it really does come across on their show. And I just think that for someone like me, who's very character based, I feel like I'd like to think I could be a part of that. But again, you know, a girl can dream. But it's a place that I think I would suit. And it's just somewhere I would love to work, whether it be, you know, in an enhancement sense, a production sense, an anything sense. But yeah, that would be somewhere I'd love to work.
A lot of times these things don't, I find this, a lot of times these things don't come around because we don't speak them into existence, because to us they feel a bit silly. But then you say them and they go, why didn't you say so?
Yeah.
Come on down.
I mean, you never know.
You never know. I mean, Jesus Christ, if I can work for Impact, you should be there. Come on, that's ridiculous. It's the wrong way round. your third and final match then, Debbie. It has been 0-2 all the way down so far. Book, Dust and the Un-Americans from No Mercy 0-2. Trish and Victoria from Survivor Series 0-2. What's your third and final one, Debbie?
The greatest wrestling match of all time. It's The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 18.
Well, we're staying firmly in 0-2. Amazing. This is a strong choice, but what to you? What does this match mean to you personally, Debbie?
I think this is the first time I kind of understood like psychology in wrestling. And it's just one of those matches you watch and you're just like, not a single move has been hit and the crowd are just going nuts. It's just facials, 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 reaction, reaction, selling. There's nothing exceptional happening in terms of, you know, move set. We're seeing punches, we're seeing leg drops, we're seeing boots. We're not seeing Canadian destroyers or like mad crazy stuff. It's literally the epitome of storytelling and character work. It's just an incredible, incredible performance on both parts.
And we've one thing we've spoken about a lot today is your passion for character work. And so this match absolutely speaks volumes to that.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you remember where you were when you watched it for the first time?
Oh.
Would this have been one with your dad?
I think so. We definitely, like, I've never experienced until like in the last couple of years, I was never allowed to watch a pay-per-view as a kid. It was never an option. So we always relied on tapes being sent over from the UK. And so if my dad wasn't going over, he'd get his friend to send them over. So yeah, we definitely watched that on a tape. Yeah, for sure. I can. Yeah, we definitely watched that and got a big mega bag of popcorn probably and watched it together. It would have been me and my older brother and my dad watching that for sure.
What is your dad, mate? Obviously we spoke about how your dad will always say, hey, I could have been me in there. What is your dad made of your wrestling journey so far?
Well, you know what, he was so supportive of it, because my dad is like, well, I won't say he's like a regular Joe Schmo, but my dad has a mullet and he loves Black Sabbath, but he lives his life in a suit. Like, he's a salesman, and a very good salesman, but he has this whole other life outside of that. But people only know him as this guy in a suit. And after years of just working and working and working, he just decided that he was going to be a singer and go record a ton of albums. So he did. And I just thought, that's so inspiring. And he said to me, well, you showed me that it's not silly to like go do something fun or go do something you've always wanted to do. So like, I think we have a mutual understanding and respect for being the people that do the mad things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally
and
does.
Because he was so supportive of me, I went out of my way to actually get him on two OTT shows and as part of my storyline. So when I won the OTT Women's Championship, it wasn't something that was planned. I just immediately looked at the camera and I said, where's my dad? And I grabbed the belt and I had no idea where he was standing. I didn't know where he was. And I just started walking, and in my head, I'm like, I don't know where he is. Like, what am I doing? This camera is following me. And my dad saw and ran down from the nosebleed seats. And there's just this moment where I show the belt to him and he just picks me up in the air. And it's just this really like wholesome moment of like this dad and daughter. And then the crowd loved it so much that we brought it into the storyline. And then he would be there with me ringside for my matches and stuff. So I think getting him involved in that was such a like, I just think he never thought that would be possible, like in front of 3,000 people to be involved in a wrestling match. So yeah, he's been super supportive. Like, he saw my very first match. So yeah, he's followed along for sure.
When we look back on those early days and you're sat with your dad, soon to be your manager, watching those VHS tapes that he's brought back from London, if you could go back to that point and you could give yourself, with all the knowledge you have now, mm-hmm. one piece of advice that they could take forward, what would that be?
Don't let people convince you that you can't chase your dreams.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. I think that sums up our chat quite nicely.
Yeah.
I think it does. Debbie, there's going to be people who want to find out more about you and probably find where your dad's music is. Where can they go to keep up with you?
You can find me on Instagram at Debbie Keitel Official, and you can find me on Twitter at Debbie Keitel. Yeah.
You've missed one.
No, we won't be. We won't be talking about the YouTube channel.
At Kaydell Joyce on no. YouTube.
So if there's an influx of followers, I'm going to have to delete that now, unlist everything.
You're welcome.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.